You know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Rolls and passes the ball to the end zone. Touchdown. You know we're gonna get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring, the bling. Listen to the crowd sing. Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense to say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense, being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing that evening, a Super Bowl Sunday, cause they're gonna go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way to the end of the game, and to go down in fame as the Super Bowl champions of this year. This team should be feared.
You better saddle up when you roll with Seattle. Broncos seem like some old cattle left in the field.
All righty. Welcome, everyone, to a TBTL No Point Conversion. I'm Luke Burbank. Right over there is my friend Andrew Walsh, who I have to say I was extremely proud of your restraint during the regular show today, Andrew, that you were. We really didn't talk about football. At the end, we kind of got into it, but I mean, I was thinking I was going to have to try to sort of like you were going to be like a bucking bronco, wanting to talk about Cleveland Browns stuff, and I was going to have to try to stay on for 8 seconds, in keeping you on track with our normal stuff. But no, you stored it away, and now I assume you're ready to just let that little light shine, my friend. First of all, congratulations.
Well, you know, as I mentioned on the text chain last night, I was taping the game because I was watching a Monk marathon. So I still don't know exactly. This is going to be a weird no point today because I'm not exactly sure what happened in the Browns-Steelers game. I assume that the Browns lost. They had no expectations of winning at all. They didn't get to practice all week because of COVID. Their head coach was secluded in his basement in his home. He was not allowed to even communicate with the team at all during the game because of NFL rules. No head coach, actually missing five coaches, missing some key players, no opportunities to practice during the week until I believe Friday they finally opened the facility. They were the underdogs against the division-leading Pittsburgh Steelers. They were traveling to Steelers for the game. I just find it hard to believe that the Browns were able to pull it off yesterday, Luke. What was the final score?
It was a nail biter. It was a defensive struggle. It was 7-3 Browns.
Oh my God, man.
If memory serves.
I am still gobsmacked. I still do not believe it. And I'll tell you what, you know, I didn't have to show restraint during the show today. There was just so much to talk about in the 2 weeks we've been off the air. But I did have to show restraint in the text chain because luckily there was, as I mentioned on the show today, I was getting a lot of messages from a lot of different people from different eras of my life and from different parts of the country who wanted to talk about the Browns during the game because they think of me as the Browns guy. And, you know, I was able to have some conversations like with our friend Tom Wassel, who is a long-suffering Giants fan, and he was the one who got it. He said, like, listen,
well,
he's like, you're going, you know, be prepared for a disappointment here. Like, trust me, you know the routine here, right? Like, even though the Browns are up 28-0 in the first quarter, it's only going to make the downfall even more painful. I'm like, I'm with you, brother. Trust me. I was getting texts from other people. Brian Buckaloo, a friend of ours who has some Ohio roots as well. He's like, how high would the score have to be for you to not be worried right now? Would it have to be in triple digits? I'm like, yeah, I guess if it was a triple digit lead, I might believe the Browns will pull this off. Like it had, I just believed from being a long-suffering Browns fan for so long, I never truly believed they would win this game until the final interception of the game with, I believe, was maybe 3 minutes left on the game clock. And
by the way,
like,
is there a better last name in football than Taki Taki?
No, that's right. He got the last one. I know. Taki Taki got the interception.
It.
And anyway, so like that's where I had to show restraint because I know you don't like that kind of talk. But like I just truly did not believe that the Browns were going to advance. I mean, I didn't believe halfway through the season that they'd actually even make it into the expanded playoffs. I was like, but a winning season would be an improvement. I want a winning season, and I want to take a couple of games from our division rivals. But to not just make it into the playoffs, but to win the first round, I mean, this last night must have been. My only regret is that I couldn't be there with some of the people like you who were texting. texting me all night. It would have been nice to make this a football party. But aside from that, I mean, yesterday was one of the most unbelievable sport events of my lifetime. I mean, unparalleled.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so happy for you, man. It reminded me a lot of the Super Bowl between the Seahawks and the Broncos, down to the fact that there was a missed snap by the Broncos, I think, on their first offensive series.
Yes.
And I can't remember if the Seahawks recovered that in the end zone or like on the 1 yard line.
I thought they did. I thought it was exactly the same play, but maybe
I know
my
it was eerie, and it was. I remember, you know, watching that Super Bowl and feeling like we were. I mean, there was a lot of similarities between the way the two games went, and I remember the Seahawks were also getting the kick at half. After the half, and that Percy Harvin like returned it for a touchdown, and that was when I finally like exhaled.
Percy Harvin, forgot about Percy. Yeah,
I thought. Well, I mean, when they got to was like 28-0 or something, I was like, this is just statistically really improbable. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to come back from this. I mean, that's an understatement, but I was just kind of like. I knew that the Steelers were going to mount some kind of a comeback. I knew there was going to be a point where the announcers start talking about, you know, the momentum shift.
Yep.
But what I expected, and I think I was sort of, this was borne out, was just when you're down by as much as the Steelers were down, every single thing has to break your way for an entire half of football. Literally, like, the other team can't even get one first down. And so, and then thankfully, I mean, not only did the Browns, they made some good play. I mean, they had like the third quarter was not their greatest quarter. They had a couple of three and outs, and you started to kind of. I can only imagine, Andrew, where you were spiraling to. Mm-hmm. But they just got some, you know, key plays from Chunt. I was very impressed, by the way, with the way that they did not alter their game plan that much. They were throwing the ball a lot in the third and fourth quarter, where you might think, well, you've got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, a.k.a. Chunt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just to sort of close the loop on something we talked about on the main show today, you wrote this funny text to us that was after, like, Nick Chubb, or I can't remember if it was Chubb or Hunt. One of them, they are, of course, just a two-headed monster of running. One of them had a really good run, and you wrote something that cracked me up, which was, what if Chunt was one of us? Just a chuntster on the bus.
I will be honest with you. I was out of my mind with emotion, but also drunk, like just straight up drunk during the game. Yeah, and I mean, those beers have come home to roost. My headache just started in between TBTL and what we're doing right now. I'm waiting
well, at least
for the
we got one broadcast in.
Yeah, but yeah. So when I sent that, I was just out of my mind. I didn't know what to say, and so for some reason, that song, "What If God Was One of Us," who sang
that's Joan Osborne.
Joan Osborne. Yeah. For some reason, the immortal words of Joan Osborne.
I loved
just
it.
Popped into my head,
and it had me thinking about that era of music, which is why I responded with, tell me all your thoughts on Chunt, because I'd really like to meet her, which I thought was a pretty solid spoof. And then, but I didn't see much chatter about it. And I was like, all right, you know. And then you texted me directly and said you were laughing about it. And I realized, oh, yeah, because you don't have the thing on your phone. You can't laugh at a text, right?
Yeah, I can't just like double tap it to get a heart or a laugh or whatever.
Not
yeah.
part of the Apple community. And so anyway. I was very gratified that joke brought you a little bit of joy. But
I was literally crying. The tears were
that
streaming.
May have been Browns related.
Oh, it was Browns related. It was booze related. But I tried to tell Genevieve. I tried to explain to her what had just happened on the text chain. But like, starting with why did I, you know, text out this Joan Osborne modified lyric. I don't even know where that came from. But then when I was describing your reply, which were those Dishwalla lyrics, I was just crying. I was just, tears were just coming down my face last night. Man, I've never felt whatever the hell I was feeling yesterday.
That was great, man. I also feel like I don't want to tell you how to feel about the rest of the playoffs, but don't you kind of feel like it's gravy at this point?
Yesterday was gravy. I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing, Luke. I mean, I didn't want the Browns to be embarrassing. That's all. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want them to look like a bunch of turds out there, but I never expected them to win. And so the whole thing was gravy. By the way, we also didn't get to do a no point last week because we were, you know, on tape and I was traveling. But honestly, like, Vives and I made a point, and we found a place that was going to show the Browns game while we were on the road. We had to drive through Salt Lake City a little bit out of our way to make sure that we were there during game time, and found a place that was showing the game. By the way, and I'm not just saying this to cover my ass, like, it was, I was very impressed with this sports bar. I don't remember the name of it, but very good job of social distancing, and there was one room for the Browns people. There's just a few of us in there and very spread out. And it felt a little bit like old times. I hadn't been in a sports bar in, well, almost a year.
Do you know where I watched, sorry, really quickly, where I watched the season finale for the Seahawks, which was like a weirdly underwhelming game, even though we won, because it was like, it became irrelevant, like, you know, midway through the third quarter.
Yeah.
I went to a sports bar in San Antonio called Side Kickers, which is... It has like 20 sand volleyball courts.
Whoa.
And then outside seating, which is why I picked it. And it was the most perfect thing ever because I was totally outside. There was nobody anywhere near me. And the bartending staff was so nice. They had outside TVs and the guy just switched on the Seahawk game. So I was sitting, I wasn't within 30 feet of anyone. I was outside looking directly at a big TV that had the Seahawks on it while people were playing sand volleyball everywhere.
Wow, that kind of sounds that sounds weird. Perfect. And the weather was warm and nice.
It was good. It wasn't like it was like in the 60s or something. Like, it was comfortable. But I just thought, boy, if somebody came to me and said, I've got a business idea, let's put in like 20 sand volleyball courts in San Antonio, Texas, I would say I don't think that's a good business plan. But it was packed. I mean, the courts were packed. Where I was sitting was completely empty.
Well, I'll go on a little bit of a tangent here. The name of the place we went to was Legends in Salt Lake City. We found it because you just type in like Seattle, or I'm sorry, you type in Salt Lake City Browns Backers Club, and you know there's one in every city.
Oh, by the way, sorry, it was called Sideliners Grill for anyone scoring at home.
It wasn't Gear Jammers. It's a place called Gear Jammers on 90 out in Yakima. Anyway, the people there were super nice because Vives and I had planned out a trip that didn't include watching the final game of the season, and then we had to kind of readjust. And one of the reasons we readjusted was because I thought, well, I might not be able to see the playoff game. If the Browns win this final game of the series or of the season last week, there was no flexibility on our travels on the way home because we had to hightail it home from the Grand Canyon if we wanted to have everything, if we wanted to spend our actual anniversary down there. And so I was like, I might miss the first Browns playoff game of my kind of intense Brown fandom life, but I was okay with that. I came to peace with that if I could watch the final game of the season against the Steelers, and then especially if the Browns ended up beating them and making their way into the playoffs. So for me, Luke, that was it. That was the big game for me, the last week's game. And then the schedule just worked out that the Browns got a primetime Sunday night game, so I was in home as, you know, home in time to watch it, which that was gravy for me. And then for the Browns to win again, like, I just can't explain how what a mental, I don't even have the words for how this all worked out, and that we're going to play the Chiefs next week. Like, I'll lose to the Chiefs. Like, we've already won, we've already surpassed my expectations so far. It just feels so good.
It's also lining up really well for the Browns because they're going into, I mean, there's zero expectation that they will beat the Chiefs. So I would be unsurprised if they beat the Chiefs, honestly, because it's just kind of like when everyone says, oh yeah, there's no way you're going to beat them on the road. That, I mean, there was, because of all the things you already mentioned going into this last game, there was no expectation they would win that game. So it's just kind of like when you're just playing with house money, things tend to just kind of roll for you sometimes. And I could see them, you know, basically with their running attack being as good as it is, I mean, that could eat up some clock. I don't know how the Chiefs are against the run. I don't know really what their defense is like. But, I mean, Mahomes is capable of having an off game or two. And, you know, Miles, like, Mahomes is obviously, like, an otherworldly talent. But I could see Myles Garrett giving him trouble. Like, I don't think, I just think it's much better to be going into a game like Kansas City where no one thinks you're going to win than being the Seahawks, who are seen as having this, like, overwhelming advantage against a beat-up and battered Rams team, which I think we can talk about that in a minute, yeah. But I think that was part of the whole problem for the Seahawks, was all that weirdness around the Rams quarterback. I have a theory that if Jamal Adams doesn't knock Wolford out, we actually win the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is some real sliding doors.
Yeah.
You know, multiverse shit. But anyway, yeah. I'm so happy for you, Andrew. Some of the stats are just insane. If I saw this right, and I wasn't drinking last night, was that the first Browns road playoff win since 1973?
I thought it was actually 60-something, but yeah, like something ridiculous like that, since pre-merging of the NFL, right?
I was doing the math. I was going to say I wasn't even a twinkle in my biological father's eye. I don't even know if I existed, because I don't know if he had sperm. At what point do you develop sperm? Like, I was seriously, this is what I was pondering last night. It was like, when did this guy in Philly actually in his teenage years start to have sperm? Because that would have, one of those would have been me. I don't know if I existed in the world the last time the Browns did this, even in that nascent form.
Can we not just do typical sports radio where we talk about when our fathers started creating sperm, Luke? It just is so cliche.
This is my audition for us to be part of the Levitard Network.
Just no point.
Yeah, just no point. Like, just spin that off and make that part of that world. Anyway, I'm really stoked for you, man. And again, the money is going to be on the Chiefs winning. The Chiefs are likely the best team in the NFL, but I think that the Browns are gonna. I think they're gonna give them a run. And I think again, the Browns have to be incredibly loose at this point. Can I ask you a question though? I didn't understand. I mean, it all worked out, but in this day and age that we live in, how is it that they couldn't rig up a way that Stefanski could call the game from his house?
NFL rules. He wanted to. In fact, Mina Kimes had a whole, she had posted something on Twitter, a segment of her talking about what a stupid rule that is. She's like, broadcasting now. I think it must have been around the horn she was on. She's like, I am at my house talking to you via an iPad. Like, everything is different in 2020, but the NFL would not change their rules. There was another team, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was a similar situation where the coach, I believe, had COVID but was feeling healthy and wanted to call the game. And the NFL would not change their rules about, you know, using technology to coach a game from afar. I think the root of that rule is in, like, to prevent cheating of some sort. Like, there are very strict rules about communication on and off the field during a game, which I can understand to a degree. But I feel like that should have been revisited during this era.
I mean, you expanded the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
Like,
exactly.
You changed. I mean, you changed. Like, for instance, the number two team didn't get a bye in each division, which they would have in a normal year because the playoffs were expanded. You already messed with the formula, so you might as well. Also, the idea of that, and I know what you're saying, they should be careful about cheating, but the idea is, I promise you, who's the least able to help your team cheat? A dude in his basement.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if anything, the cheating would happen from the people that are actually on the ground standing there looking at it. So, yeah, that's kind of a silly rule. I didn't realize that, so thank you. Question asked and answered.
Can I go back to one thing you said before? Because now I'm thinking about pitching this. Now, I know that Levitard isn't part of the ESPN world anymore, but you got Mina Kimes, who's a Seahawks fan and is a sports broadcaster. And then you got you, longtime Seahawks fan, and does this. You got me, a Browns fan. You got Mike Ryan, producer of Levitard Show, a huge Browns fan. We pair up with those two, and we do. We bring them into no-point conversion. We become part of the Levitard Network.
Sign me up. Where do I sign?
Okay. I'll reach out to Mike.
I want to imagine this is, I don't want to snatch defeat from the jaws of just absolute bliss for you today, but I'm trying to imagine the first show we do where you're talking sports in front of the ears of Mina Kimes.
I probably wouldn't talk so much as just,
well, that's the thing that would stress me out for
you.
I
would just wave at you
just
all.
Because of how, and I don't think that this, by the way, I think you're far too quick to criticize your knowledge of sports. But I'm imagining if we, I mean, this only because you and I have known each other for as many years as we have, are you comfortable probably saying anything about sports around me? I'm imagining you around former, well, I guess Mina is still technically ESPN personnel.
Yeah.
I think that would be a lot for you, but I think we should, you listen, you went on a helicopter ride.
Right.
The sky's the limit, bro.
Did I tell you that Mina was on the helicopter? I said there was one other person on
the
chopper.
Oh, you didn't, but that, well, why didn't you pitch the show?
I didn't know about the show.
You don't pitch the show.
Wait, what was I going to say? Oh, this is related to what you were saying. Vives and I, we were, I'm trying to think if we were listening to the Seahawks game on the radio or maybe we were somewhere. Maybe we were watching a game recently. I can't remember. Everything's a blur. But mm-hmm. we were talking, you know, a flag was thrown and we just knew what it was, right? It was just like, well, that's going to be a hold, you know, and that's going to, and then they're going to, that's right. There's something happened in a game. I think maybe when we were watching the Brown Steelers game last week and Aviv says, oh, that's going to be a hold, but they'll decline it. I'm like, yeah. And then, of course, it happens as a hold and they decline it. And she just turned to me and she said, we're so good at watching football now. And I was like, yes. Like when we were, when Vives and I, like what, when we started watching football heavily, when we became friends with you and Durs and I guess it was the, maybe the last couple of years of the Hasselbeck era. And we enjoyed it, but we were always confused about why everybody would dance around the ball after a punt. Sometimes we didn't know what was going on. We'd always ask each other and we'd think we had it figured out. And then, we, you know, eventually we know and we understand the punt rules. Now, the one thing that we still don't understand is ineligible receiver downfield. That's the thing that keeps on confusing us. But it is funny how, like, yeah, we didn't know anything about some of the very basic rules of football when we first started watching it. And then she just turns to me and she's like, we're so good at watching football now.
I don't like the ineligible man downfield rule because it, first of all, if you want to, you're not even allowed to throw to one of the, you're not allowed to throw to a lineman. They're not a, they're not an eligible receiver. So what are you really trying to fix with that? Like, I guess you could make the, let's say, well, first of all, I don't know why linemen aren't eligible, but let's just say.
But can't you make them? See, I don't, we're starting from a place where I don't, can't you make an announcement? Like, I'm going to make this lineman an eligible receiver.
Yes.
And then what,
yes.
do you have to take somebody else? Do you make somebody else ineligible and you tell the other
I believe
team?
That's it. There's some kind of like number that you're of eligible receivers you're allowed to have probably.
Okay.
But like to me it's just like it would be more fun if the lineman could run routes. And like if you want to lose a blocker, isn't that kind of your business as the offense?
It seems
like if
it,
you want to just turn Dwayne Brown loose and let him just run like a 10-yard out route and like throw to him, boy, there's a fun factor. Like, I'd watch that.
I mean,
I don't understand.
Didn't the Browns do that like a few weeks? Was it the Browns or the Seahawks? I thought it was the Browns did that a few weeks ago, right? They made one
it
of their linemen.
It happens on occasion, but you're right. There's a certain amount of trickeration where you have to, like, that player has to report as eligible, but I think you have to try to do it in a way that the defense doesn't notice. You have to disguise them a little bit because, like, what I don't think you can really do is have, like, your center go out for a pass. I think that also has to do with where on the line they are. They have to be sort of further out to the right or left. But to me, it's just like, what are they trying to fix for? I understand offsides in soccer. I mean, the idea of offsides in soccer or in hockey for that matter is just so you don't just end up with like two dudes standing down by the goal, not even running, just waiting for someone to just like punt a ball way the heck down the field. Which wouldn't, it's more fun to see everybody kind of interacting in the center of the field and moving the ball around, et cetera. Apologies to our soccer fans who had to hear me describe that because that was very botched. But you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I understand why you have those offsides calls. I don't understand why the ineligible receiver rule exists. I don't really know what the downside would be of linemen being able to catch passes because, again, every lineman you send out is just one less person you have blocking the quarterback.
Right.
The quarterback.
Here, can I let me play this sound just because I want to do everything we can to be on the wrong, to get on the wrong side of the NFL, and I'm sure I'm not allowed to play this in a podcast.
Third down and goal. Mayfield's going to throw. He throws. End zone. Touchdown. Kendall Lamb.
We're opening up the back pages of the playbook today.
Now, don't be jealous, Doug. Yes. Kendall Lamb just caught a touchdown.
on the University Hospitals line.
I love the fact that we live in a world where you listen to Jim Donovan more than I do. Kendall Lamb is, I believe, the right tackle for the Browns. And, yeah, there he was.
And so maybe I'm wrong about that, by the way, because right tackle is pretty – you're pretty central to the whole thing. I feel like a lot of times will happen – sometimes they'll send out somebody who's sort of a – kind of in between a, like a George Fant, somebody who's sort of a lineman – but couldn't play it, maybe could play tight end. I mean, I guess you could probably just declare anybody eligible. And but again, it's kind of a giveaway sometimes to the defense if a guy who's not usually eligible is suddenly declared eligible. So I don't know how that communication loop works. But point is, we're very excited, Andrew. We're very excited for your Cleveland Browns. And congratulations. I'm happy for you. And I'm, you know, like I have to say, well, I am always bullish on the Browns, and in years past, that they've more like performed the way you were afraid they were. Like I always, for the past four seasons, I've been like, "This is their year." So I guess it's just at some point I'm going to be right. But if you would have said to me that Browns will still be in the playoffs and the Seahawks will be eliminated, if you told me the Browns had to play their way into the playoffs on the last game of the regular season, and the Seahawks were NFC West champs and were 12-4. And that the Browns were going to make it further into the playoffs than the Seahawks, I would have been surprised at that outcome.
Yes.
Based on all of that information.
Yes. You know, I'm remembering now a hot take that I had many weeks ago that I think for the first time in history, I got done doing a no-point conversion and thought, oh, I had something I really wanted to talk about. And now, of course, this is the coldest take possible because we are sitting where we're sitting. But Browns, OBJ... the opposite of a collision course. Like, wow. They're better without. And I believe they'd have to renegotiate his contract for next year. I don't know what it is, and it's not that he is a bad player, but he didn't have it with Baker. Whatever it is, he didn't have it. And so now, you know, Baker's spreading out his offense a little bit more, having more targets, using the tight ends more, and it's worked out really well.
I tend to think that any NFL receiver, I mean, obviously there are NFL receivers that are above, like, they're sort of like, they're better than other NFL receivers for whatever reason. They're bigger, they're faster, they have great hands, they're more precise route runners. But I am of the opinion that any NFL receiver, if targeted, will catch passes in an NFL game because they're all super good. That's how they got in the NFL. And like a Hollywood Higgins or a Donovan Peoples-Jones. By the way, why did they need to drag Hollywood Higgins last night?
Did the announcers, what did they say?
After a completion to him, I believe it was Chris Collinsworth saying, he's not the fastest guy, he's not the best route runner, but he and Baker just get each other. And I'm like, okay, he just caught like a 14-yard pass. We have to take this moment to observe that he's not the best route runner. And like, really, Chris, have you studied the tape? I doubt it.
I did not catch that.
You're like
that.
A Trump family member tweeting about something being Orwellian. Have you really reviewed the materials?
Wasn't that Holly who tweeted that? Best tweet. I said I'm not going to live on Twitter anymore. But when Holly was complaining about Simon & Schuster canceling his book deal, he said it was Orwellian. Somebody retweeted and said, no, it wasn't. Orwell got published.
I feel like that might have been Stu.
Oh, whoever the person who burned it was a woman.
Maybe that was a common refrain. I thought I saw our friend Stu tweeting something like that at Holly or to in a response. But I feel like here's the other thing that happens when you have an OBJ, and I'm not somebody who overly believes in like locker room drama, etc., as it being or really what I don't believe is that there are games that teams want to win and games that teams don't want to win. I feel like they want to win every game. But I will say that when you have somebody like OBJ and you're paying them a shitload of money and they're very famous, there is a certain amount of pressure on the offensive coordinator and on the quarterback to utilize that player.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this exactly falls into that category, but that quite breathtaking pick six that was thrown in the Seahawks game was an attempt to get the ball to a very frustrated DK Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as they kept pointing out, that was the only wide-out screen that was intercepted, I believe, this season. Not even pick six, but intercepted.
Mm.
So that is a very safe pass generally, and it seems like that guy just jumped it, just absolutely read it, you know, and jumped the route. That being said, was that an attempt to get DK involved because DK was over there, you know, banging his helmet and being mad.
Was he? See, I listened, and we should talk about the Seahawks game, too. And I do want to say that I feel bad for you and the other lifelong Seahawks fans who are listening, but I was also very bummed, even though my love of the Browns, I guess, does now supersede my love of the Seahawks. I still love the Seahawks a lot, and that was a really, really bummer of a game, especially because at that point I'm like, and now the Browns are going to lose tomorrow. but I didn't get to watch it. I only got to hear that game, which is a very different experience. Vives and I are now good at watching football. We're not as good at listening to football. We'll work on it. But yeah, it sounded like that pick there, which I didn't get to see, it really sounded like the defender just like was super smart about it. Like they were trying to disguise it and he didn't fall for
it. Clearly that defender had watched a lot of tape and knew that when we were in a certain formation, the likelihood was this was going to happen. Because, I mean, it was like one of those plays where there's a handoff and the defensive guy is already in the backfield. Like he almost takes the handoff from the quarterback as opposed to the running back. Like it was one of those kind of moments where this guy just read the route and just basically bull charged his way through. It was DK and another Seahawk were out there, and this guy just like jumped in between him, grabbed the ball, and was gone.
Can you tell me more about DK? I forgot when I started my sentence before. I forgot what the ending
was supposed
to be.
Well, DK was very frustrated. I mean, it was a very anemic offensive performance by the Seahawks, with like basically the exception of this one touchdown to DK, which was kind of a scramble where like the play broke down. Russell was running for his life, and DK just broke for the end zone, and Russell threw one of his moon balls, and he caught it. That was the one moment of the game where I was like, oh, we've actually, okay, fine, we have this figured out now. I mean, it was a super weird game for the Seahawks because we didn't know who the quarterback was going to be for the Rams, and you have this kid Wolford who's very unproven, and then you have Jared Goff with a broken thumb that has been surgically repaired very recently. Both of those seem like bad options for the Rams coming in to play a Seahawks defense that's looked a lot better. I thought that this was a game where the Seahawks really, really had the advantage, owing mostly to injuries for the Rams. But we just laid an egg, you know, and it was just a very bad time for that to happen. Also, I think historically Russell Wilson has his worst games against teams that have really good defensive lines. It's just his Achilles heel because he's pretty good at evading pressure, but if he's under pressure the whole game, he's going to make some bad decisions. It's going to rush the timing. I mean, the thing that really killed us too was inability to establish the run. Like, I don't know why we didn't. We should have run the ball more, which is rarely a thing you'll hear from me. But we should have just been running the ball. I wrote on our text chain, we should have, there was a point where, because here's the problem, when you, in order to execute a pass play, the quarterback needs like 3 seconds. And if you want to throw a deep pass, it's got to be more than 3 seconds. Well, we were incapable of stopping Aaron Donald from coming into the backfield. So we didn't have, Russell Wilson did not have 3 seconds to throw a pass. And the only way you can really, at that point, I think, move the ball is to start handing it off. And just like wait for Chris Carson to break one. And then also, by the way, once your run game is established, then a play action pass freezes the defenders. So I just think we should have worked harder to establish the run early. We didn't. Russell had a pretty crappy game. And then our defense was not good at stopping the run. I mean, what's his name? Akers had like 140 all-purpose yards or something. Like we could not stop them because their quarterback was not going to be a threat, whether it was Wolford or Goff. So at that point, we needed to just do everything in our power to stop the run, and we just couldn't really stop the run on a lot of critical plays. And then we just made mistakes. We had the pick six. We had a fumble from Reed. We just had some unfortunate plays. I mean, we just played a shitty game on the one day out of the year. You don't want to play a shitty game.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they didn't run the ball as much because they didn't find themselves at 3rd and 21 enough? Because I know that Pete Carroll loves running the ball. And that I'm actually a big fan of running the ball. I mean, maybe that's because of my watching of so much Browns games, and they have, but I mean, Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, like that, don't sneeze at that, right? Like those guys, if you can get them the ball, but you do have to be patient with it. And when it looks like Russell is not having, when he's not playing his smartest game or his most comfortable game, I'm with you. Do it. Like lean on that more. And also might give him some more options. It might open things up for him.
You're also right though, that We were behind the chains a lot, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because of dumb penalties, like holding penalties, which, I mean, look, if I'm a Rams fan and I see a Seahawk lineman holding some, I mean, there was one play where Russell scrambled for 15 yards in a first down, and they called it back because of a holding on Posick.
I think Posick I saw that. Was that
really
fourth
critical? I think it was third, but it was like pretty critical. And I mean, granted, Ethan Posick was holding the guy. It's also hard though because you could call a holding call on every single NFL offensive play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of, you know, that's just one of those things where we just had some critical errors where we got holding calls that then created these like third and second and 20 yard situations where then you're like the playbook is out the window now. Now you're just in survival mode, and we just could not protect Russell Wilson long enough for him to get off any kind of decent passes. That, to me, was the critical issue for the offense. I don't know if they weren't – Durs had raised the possibility they weren't blitzing Jamal Adams more, maybe because of his shoulder, which I guess was pretty messed up. It was a torn labrum. But he also used that shoulder to tackle Wolford and knock him out, which, again, it's one of those things. I have been thinking about this a lot in my regular life, Andrew, which is the maybe principle. Did I talk about this on TBTL?
I don't think so.
I'm pretty obsessed with it. It's like it's this old sort of fable, right? There's this guy, and he's living in, let's say, I don't know, China. And he is a farmer, and his horse goes missing. And everybody says, oh, that's so sad. Your horse is gone. And he says, oh, maybe. And the next day, the horse comes back, and it brings a wild horse with it. And everyone's like, that's so lucky. You got two horses now. And the guy goes, maybe. And then the next day, his son is trying to break the wild horse, and he gets bucked off the horse, and he breaks his leg. And they're like, oh, that's so sad that your son broke his leg. And he goes, maybe. And then the next day, the military comes by, and they're basically, conscripting. They're just grabbing young men to go fight in this war. But they don't take his kid because he got the broken leg. And they're like, oh, that's so good that your son didn't go to war. And he's like, maybe. The idea being you just never know how shit's going to go.
Yeah.
And like, Jamal Adams, I don't think Jamal Adams was trying to hurt Wolford, by the way. I think he was trying to tackle him. The guy was falling at an awkward angle, and that just happened. And I feel like they were saying on the announcers were saying that should have been a defenseless player. It's like he wasn't sliding. He's going. I don't understand how they expect defensive players, and I would say this for either team. I don't understand how they expect defensive players to defy physics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're trying to tackle a guy. The guy's diving forward. You're trying to stop him, but you're supposed to, at some point, amid that process, contort your body. I just don't think it's possible. But anyway, when Adams knocked him out, I think that actually was bad for the fortunes of the Seahawks because Jared Goff comes in. He didn't have the game of his lifetime, but he was competent enough. And he was, like, I saw Wolford making way more mistakes than Goff would.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of those maybe things where you might think, oh, wow, we knocked out their quarterback. But it's like, no, I think that actually made it worse for us.
Yeah, I didn't get to see that hit. That's one I was definitely listening to. I assumed as soon as they said that he was still lying there. And it is really scary. I mean, sending somebody directly from the
field. I'm not saying anything about Wolford if I were – you wish the guy the best. It's just one of those plays where it didn't strike me as like some – horrendous targeting where it was like Jamal Adams was just like the whole play, like how do I hurt this person? It was just one of those funky tackles where you're going down to tackle the guy and their body moves to a place where your body isn't expecting it to move kind of thing. I mean, it was his shoulder as well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing that I think the bigger picture for these types of things is like we're watching a barbaric game that my moral compass says we should probably not be embracing as a society. Sure. I'm not proud of my fandom of football. I'm not doing anything about it because, God damn, I love it. But, like, I'm not proud of it. I think it's a bad thing for society and what we're doing to people's bodies and all of it that goes along with it. But I think the reason you have announcers and then the league itself and they have these rules that don't make any sense is because it's their way of kind of trying to say, well, we're watching out for the players. I mean, it's really hypocrisy because, some of these things, and we've been on, as fans, you and I have been on both sides of it, like calls that shouldn't be called. But it makes us all feel better, like, oh, the league is looking out for these defenseless quarterbacks when it doesn't make sense. Like, the game is barbaric. You just can't have it both ways.
Right. That's what's frustrating about it is they're trying to sort of cover their own, butts/moral consciences. but it just creates this very, I would describe it as Orwellian situation. Is that what the book's about?
Yes.
Anyway, point being, I think that the Rams were better off with Goff, who just has more experience. And the thing I will say though is, look, the Seahawks should have won the game. The Rams were not at full capacity, at least in the quarterback position. But the Rams are also not a shit team.
Mm-mm, no.
Like the first, my guess would be preseason they were the favorites to win the division. They already beat us once, this year. They have Cooper Kupp. They have Woods. They have the best defense in the league. They literally have the best defense in the NFL. And so when you look at that, it's like, I think the Seahawks should have won. I think this represents a real failure for them. But it's not like when they lost to the Giants. Yeah. And it was kind of like, whoa, what did you just do? This was the Seahawks played a really lousy game against a team. I mean, there are teams that have won the Super Bowl based on just their defense being good. See Baltimore Ravens with Trent Dimes-Dilfer as their quarterback. Like, it's a thing where teams that have really good defenses can win in the NFL even when their offense is not great. And that is basically what happened to the Seahawks on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I keep on slipping. I'm going to move back to the Seahawks for a second. But that's just one part that my brain keeps latching onto last night's game against the Browns and the Steelers. It's like I just remember that, there are two teams from the NFC North in the playoffs still, and one of them is the Browns. Like, that's one thing that I kind of... It's like, we beat the first, we beat our opponent in the first round of the playoffs is amazing. But then you have to remind yourself, also, it was the Steelers. Like, not only are we moving on, we stopped them. Like,
the only thing better for you would be if it was the Ravens.
The
right?
Ravens, yes. And we'll see what happens. I'm not getting my hopes up, but there is a chance that it will be down to the Browns and the Ravens in an elimination game. But I kind of doubt we'll get to that point. But anyway, back to what you were saying about the Seahawks game. Like I said, I didn't get to see it. I was listening to it. It sounded pretty bad. And it does sound like Jamal Adams' shoulder was a lot more than we realized during the game. That and the fingers, the two broken fingers we knew
But he was hitting people hard. That's the thing. He was not playing like he was favoring it.
But wasn't he missing? And I only read a little bit about this, but I thought he was saying in the post-game press conference that like his ability to cover, they were blitzing him, but his ability to cover was impacted because he was not able to like swing his arm because of his shoulder. He wasn't able to.
Well, that would make
balls.
Sense because he had a really shitty. There was a 44-yard throw to Cooper Kupp where Jamal Adams was totally in position to just intercept the ball, and he probably couldn't raise his arm.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make. I didn't hear that press conference, but that would make sense. But to me, it's like I just wish they would have blitzed him more.
Yeah.
Because what they needed to do was get more pressure on Goff or Wolford because Jared Goff does really poorly under pressure. I don't know how many sacks we ended up with. But it wasn't enough. Like, what we needed to do was pin our ears back and just bring the house on Goff every single play and disrupt him. That, to me, would have been the better defensive strategy. But, you know.
Did they look, aside from not winning, like, here's what I'm going to get at here. You were just saying, like, listen, the Rams are not the Giants. And I'm with you on that. The Rams are a good team. They've been a good team since in the past several years. They always, I think we often will split the games with them, right? Probably go 1-1 against the Rams on an average season. You could look it up. I have no idea. So yeah, they're not a team that is going to embarrass you if you lose to them. However, was the style of play and the look that the Seahawks were presenting out there kind of embarrassing? I talked to my dad briefly yesterday. He actually watched the Seahawks game, and he doesn't obsess over football the way you and I do, but he did say to me, he's like, that Seahawks game was rough, man. They looked really, like, he kind of said something along the lines of like, yeah, they didn't just get beat, but they were kind of embarrassing out there. Is that true?
Well, they looked flat. I mean, yeah. I mean, here's what we're, as Seahawks fans, what we're trained to expect now is that Russell Wilson will always pull it out at the end. He will play better in the second half than the first half. I mean, if you remember, like, the NFC Championship game, we came back against the Green Bay Packers. Russell Wilson had thrown four interceptions in that game. It's not unprecedented that he will have a rough first half, but he always seems to find this inner reserve of magic. and he didn't find it. And then it was like, so the picks, like, and then when things would get bad, they just kind of stayed bad and they even got worse. Like, every time that we were knocking on the door, we were about to actually make the game close again, we would just sort of mess something up. I mean, the fumble that we, the kick return fumble was kind of the final nail in the coffin. From DJ Reed, who, by the way, had a couple of really good returns and who I was really stoked on. We just really laid an egg, and we did look flat. So it didn't have that normal magical moment where the Seahawks just somehow find it. Mm-hmm. We just never found it. And that's always been the danger of not playing well early. The Seahawks have historically really good in the fourth quarter, but that means they've always kind of like had to wait until the fourth quarter to suddenly start clicking. And the problem with that is if you don't click, you lose the game. Like, you, instead of just coming out and like opening, you know, with, although they did have a weird stat this year where for a certain period of time, I believe they were leading the NFL in first drive touchdowns, which was shocking to me, because for many years it was a joke, we would almost always end up punting on our first possession. Mm-hmm. But we sort of were doing better this year for a while. I don't know. I mean, it was a very up and down season for the Seahawks, and I think Russell Wilson is still a really good quarterback. And I mean, I was reading this article today in the Seattle Times, this Larry Stone piece talking about how this is the first time ever that the Seahawks are going into the offseason with questions at the quarterback position. And I don't think he means should they keep Russell Wilson, but just like, usually it's like, well, we got to fix all these things, but one of the things that doesn't need attention is Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a given that Russell Wilson did everything he could. And really, the last half of this season was a pretty, even though we were winning games, statistically, he was kind of falling off a cliff. I blame that on protection, though. I mean, I would argue that he's probably one of the most hit quarterbacks, or if he wasn't, it was only because of his elusive abilities. I think that they didn't protect. There was, what I don't think you see a lot from Russell Wilson is super clean pocket, and then he just throws a bonehead pass. Right? Like, I don't think that's what happens. When he gets in trouble is when he's trying to make something happen, he holds onto the ball too long, and he's scrambling for his life. So I just think they have to figure out a way to protect Russell Wilson, and if they do that, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, a couple of things on all of this. You saying that the Seahawks have this reputation or they've trained us to keep hope, it is amazing how my relationship with a Seahawks game and a Browns game are polar opposites, and it burns you. It can burn you because in the same way I always expected the Browns to lose yesterday's game, even when they were literally up 28-0 in the first quarter. I just thought, oh, this is, they'd make it even more painful for you. Like, you just always expect them to lose, or I do, or I did. The Seahawks, I always expect them to pull out some magic in the fourth quarter, and I believed it again. So Veeves and I got home for the very end of the third quarter and watched the entire fourth quarter here at home. And I just believed up until, I think, that final fumble that you mentioned, that they were going to figure out a way. Like, because they got a touchdown with Luke. I'm really shooting from the hip, or maybe there was 4 minutes left in the game. They did get a touchdown, but I'm sure that it was also the result of the Rams probably playing a little bit more of a preview.
Yeah, it was
defense.
Kind of garbage time. Like, the game was statistically pretty much out of reach.
But I was doing the math. I was like, yeah, but it's Russell, and it's the Seahawks, and it's a playoff game, and you get the onside kick, and like, I was doing the math, and I was just like, wow, that's how they're going to do it. And so when they actually lost the game, I tend to be in disbelief. And it makes the loss even harder. I mean, it's a testament to what they've done over the years, but I just don't really believe they're going to lose until the last second is off the clock, which is literally the opposite of how I am with the Browns.
Let's not lose sight of something else. There were no fans in the stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's huge for the Seahawks. Now,
maybe.
I mean, should it have to be?
I was just
I don't
playing
know.
The maybe game.
Right.
Sorry.
But I mean, you could say that that's a crutch that the Seahawks rely on. But I think they would have won the game if there was 60,000+ people screaming their faces off.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that Wolford and Goff would have had a harder time doing their thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I've said this a bunch on this show, but I don't think there's maybe any team that was hurt more by no fans than the Seahawks.
Yeah, I believe that.
And again, you could say, well, like, just go win the football game. Don't rely on Big Low showing up with his C-fence sign. And that would probably be a reasonable argument. But I think that that game would go differently if this if the fans were there. So that's another thing that I think is a bit of a factor. This was it's just in this Larry Stone piece. I think he kind of he sums up. Let me see if I can find this part of the article. He said, now the Seahawks will have to come to grips with how they seem plagued year after year by the same issues in crunch time. Slow starts on offense, third down inefficiency, porous protection for Wilson, and dubious clock management, mm-hmm. which I read to be Pete Carroll's ridiculous timeout calling. Like, I don't think that there is a coach in the league who's worse at clock management and timeout preservation than Pete Carroll. And I have said this a million times, probably on this show. I've certainly texted to you guys. I can't think of any reason to use a timeout before the last 4 minutes of an NFL football game. I mean, the first half, you know, you don't get to carry those over. But as far as the second half goes, I can't think of a penalty. Maybe if it's fourth and one. Any other situation, take the 5 yards. Mm-hmm. Like, Pete Carroll's... The way that Pete Carroll, and I guess to a degree Russell Wilson, the way that we burn timeouts, which we desperately need at the end of games, is just it's terrible. So anyway, I just read that because to me that typifies the problem. Slow starts on offense, third down inefficiency, they can't protect Wilson, and they don't manage the clock very well.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems willful, doesn't it, with Pete Carroll?
Yeah.
Doesn't it almost seem like he's like, no, this is my thing. I know. I take it way too personally. But you're just like, why are you hurting us, Pete Carroll? What are you doing there? It seems baffling. Yeah. He must have some theory, right? Like, after doing this for so long.
Well, again, I don't know if it's always him calling it. Sometimes it's like the offense... there was a weird play in there too. I mean, the Seahawks lost this game straight up to the Rams. They just lost it because they played badly. But there were some weird plays where it was like there was this really critical play where the Seahawks, you could just see that it was unclear to Russell Wilson, and maybe it's on him to educate himself, where the play clock was. It was a weird play where they had a Seahawk injured, and there was 20. The play clock starts at 25 seconds, right? Is it 25 seconds? Or maybe it's 35 seconds, whatever. The play clock starts running down after a play. A Seahawk got hurt. They stop the play clock. It's at 22 seconds. And then the Seahawks go into the huddle, and Russell Wilson is under the impression they have reset the play clock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Now I'm remembering this. Yep.
And then you had the back judge, I think is what he's called. Anyway, you had the official who stands kind of back behind the running back signaling to reset the clock. And Russell's just in the huddle talking, and I'm watching it. It's like at 5 seconds before they break the huddle, we end up getting a funky false start call because of all the disarray. And it was like that was one of those – there was a bunch of little plays like that where, like, if we don't get that penalty and we're not trying to do this on – I can't remember if that was third down or fourth down. But it's like if we don't get that penalty, we probably convert that play. We're more likely to. We also just, by the way, our game planning, like our – what we were doing was just terrible. Like, the plays that we had drawn up, when we did run Carson, like in third and short situations, it's like we ran him into the most predictable sections of the line. It was like all the plays look kind of slow and developing. Mm-hmm. I think it was a kind of across the board failure for the Seahawks. But I remain hopeful for next year. I think Russell Wilson is still a really elite quarterback. I think if they figure out how to protect him, I'm now thinking they should re-sign Chris Carson.
Hmm.
I wasn't before, but I think he was healthy enough this season to justify it.
Hmm.
I don't know who you're going to.
Risky gambit. I mean, even if it's not Chris, right? Like, all signing a running back with, because he'd be asking for a pretty big contract, right? That's the big big controversy now, and everybody says, like, no matter who it is, book says no on a running back because of their injury prone, and Carson seems especially injury prone. But my heart is with you because I love a good running game, and he is a good running
back. Yeah, where
are
we going to get?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe we get lucky, and there's somebody who has been kind of. You know, it was like a second-year player that didn't get a good shot with his team, and then he just, like, has a breakout year. But, I mean, it's – I don't know. You're going to rely on just hoping you find some gem or more likely, which it seems like a thing the Seahawks do, just bring in some – like, see, hey, Frank Gore, are you still available? Or Because Frank Gore, you want to wait on taking your Social Security for two more years because you get more of it when you sign up at 65.
Yeah, right.
Like, what are we going to get? Like a running back who's really on the back nine and try to just get some production out of them? Like, I don't. I mean, I guess maybe you. We don't have any first round draft picks. Maybe you just hope you get really lucky and draft someone good. I mean, I don't know. I'm also very bad with salary cap stuff.
Yeah.
I know that the Seahawks don't have a lot of wiggle room, probably because of how much they're paying Russell.
Can I ask you something? Can I throw something out here, though? I mean, it also seems like you are right. I think we're seeing more and more of Seahawks going for, like, you know, big-name players who might be a little bit past their prime or more associated with another team, right? We even still have I forgot Greg Olsen was on our team until I heard it on the radio. Like, I don't know how I keep forgetting that. But that wasn't the Seahawks that I feel like I fell in love with in the earlier Pete Carroll years. Like, bringing Marshawn in, that was not a sure bet, right? He was good, but he was playing for Buffalo. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. I feel like they had this reputation for taking guys who were underappreciated elsewhere and then developing them. Same with like later draft picks. Like, that was always the beauty of the Seahawks. They weren't going for number one picks and they weren't just trying to grab this elite talent. And when they did, it would tend to blow up in their face in some way or another. Percy Harvin, etc.
Yeah, we did have that reputation. I mean, there was like a lot of Brandon Browner was playing in the CFL. Richard Sherman was like a converted defensive player. He'd been a wide receiver at Stanford. I mean, I kind of tend to think that Legion of Boom thing was just one of those kind of like kismet kind of miracles that just comes together. You just have like, you have, you know, solid linebackers who both, again, KJ and Bobby, I think have both had careers that no one would have expected for them. And then you just, like, it just kind of all sort of crystallized at the right moment and made John Schneider and Pete Carroll look like geniuses. But I don't know if that's, I don't know if they've really been able to keep that up. And then, yeah, the Marshawn thing, that was just one of those lucky deals where you just have this guy who is, you know, decent at Buffalo, but he comes over to the Seahawks. It wasn't a remarkable signing when we got Marshawn Lynch. It just worked out here. That does happen sometimes, but it's like you can't bank on that. You can't just like think you're going to get another team is going to send you a Marshawn Lynch that they don't realize is Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. It just seems like the things that the Seahawks, that the most exciting things about the Seahawks, and this is maybe just feeling a little depressed after a loss, but like the things that made the Seahawks special, that type of talent, I guess, acquisition and more development, and Russell always pulling things off at the end, and Russell being smart above everything else, like that stuff just, it's hitting a nadir or something here in the second half of the season, which is weird, and if I'm going to turn this into a question at all, it's what happened, because Russell Wilson began the season looking like it was going to be the best season of his life,
then it turned into the blurst of times,
and it was the blurst of times. Like, did it actually end up being probably his worst season?
No, I don't think so, but I mean, I think if you take the whole season together, it couldn't be, because he had such a hot start.
Yeah,
but here's what I think. NFL teams watch a lot of film, and I think that teams started to diagnose what the Seahawks were doing. And I don't know exactly what they were doing. I'm not smart enough for it, but I know that other teams adjusted, and they made it harder for Russell to throw those big passes through some adjustment in the kind of defense they were playing. And also, you know, the Seahawks played four very good defensive teams down the stretch. The WTFs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. WFTs.
The team from Washington, they had a very good defensive line. They have this guy, Chase Young, that's really tough. The Giants, actually, for being a team that didn't have a real gaudy record, they had a pretty solid defense. And the Rams' defense is the number one. They played them. You know, they were playing teams that had good defenses. So that doesn't help Russell's case. I just think that other teams started to figure him out. I think the number one thing the Seahawks have to do, and they never do this, they never prioritize their offensive line. It's always like we converted some tight end and tried to teach him how to block. We went out and, like, it's never a priority. Since Steve Hutchinson left the Seahawks to go to the Minnesota Vikings, like during the Hasselbeck era, I feel like since then, like there was 1 year under Mike Holmgren with Matt Hasselbeck where we had, I think, like the best offensive line in the league. And by no coincidence, Matt Hasselbeck was having an incredibly, incredibly productive year. Since then, under the Pete Carroll era, I feel like we've never went out and spent the money or the draft capital to get really, really solid offensive linemen.
Mm.
And I just think if you protect Russell, if you give him more time, he will produce. And also, presumably, I know pass blocking and run blocking are slightly different, but I also think it has to help your run game a little bit. I don't know. I just think you have DK Metcalf. He is a Calvin Johnson-esque receiver. He is an incredibly talented receiver who you can build around. You still Tyler Lockett has still got some years in him. I think Russell Wilson's got two more elite seasons in him. Build around that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what, and the way you build around that, I think, is protection. And then, you know, as far as the defense goes, I mean, I hope they bring back Carlos Dunlap because I think he had a real impact. The Jamal Adams thing is a big question mark because he's going to want a lot of money. And it's like, is that worth it? I don't know. He's kind of Mr. Glassy. KJ Wright and Bobby are, I think, both, or maybe it's just KJ is a free agent now. I mean, I have to say, KJ played better this season than Bobby, in my opinion. Bobby Wagner looked he was good, but he definitely looked like, even in the last game they lost, there was a couple times where he whiffed majorly. Like, you know, those guys are getting older too. How much money do you want to spend on a KJ Wright at this point? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does bum me out, to go back to another thing that you were talking about before that I was totally blind to because the announcers didn't mention on the radio. I didn't realize that Metcalf was making some noise on the sidelines.
Yeah,
I don't know how much.
Screaming.
Really? See, that's a real bummer for me because that's
it was OBJ style.
Thing. Yeah, and OBJ, I don't like it when it comes from OBJ, but OBJ is also a veteran who, you know, right. Who is literally an iconic image of him catching a football with one hand. Like, DK Metcalf is amazing. He is one of my favorite players in football right now. He is one of my favorite players to watch. I love him. He's a rookie. Like, right? This is his rookie year or is this his second year? But either way,
second
like,
year.
This is his second year. Okay. So I take that back. But, like, don't be that guy. Don't be guy.
Now, let me just clarify a couple things. It didn't appear he was yelling at any person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't in the face of the offensive coordinator, although I think Shoddy's up in a skybox, so maybe he couldn't. He was just yelling, and it was frustration around not being targeted, which is, I kind of understand that. It comes from a place of wanting to help the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also there was tape later of him like laughing and kind of like palling around with, I forget who it was. But it was sort of like, I think it was a moment of frustration that passed. And it wasn't like he was sulking. He wasn't like off on the sideline, like not talking to anyone. It was, I just think he's a young guy and he wanted to help the team and he got pissed because he felt like he, you know, was open or whatever. And then like, you know, 5 minutes later, Russell Wilson is throwing this extremely fun to watch touchdown pass to him, which seemed to kind of fix things for them. So anyway, I just feel like you got to look. Here's what I'll say as we sort of wrap up Seahawk talk on the No Point for a few months. The good news, if you're a Seahawks fan, is these could be famous last words. You're not looking at a team that's about to go 2-14, like. Seahawks fans have been very blessed. Most teams, if it's not... Look, the Patriots didn't make the playoffs this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not... Unless you're talking about, like, the Patriots, maybe, most teams endure a lot of shitty seasons, I'm telling my Cleveland Browns fan friend. Like, the Seahawks have not had a shitty season in a long time. Again, I could be jinxing this by saying it. I think as long as you have Russell Wilson, as long as Pete Carroll is your coach, I think you have... you're going to be competitive. You may not always be 12-4, but look, they've gone to the playoffs, I think, 8 of the 9 years they've had Russell Wilson. So I think we're going to be competitive next year. I mean, it could be an up and down season. I don't know if we'll be 12-4. I don't know if they can make those kind of, if they have the room to make those kinds of offseason adjustments. But what I know is we're not going to be 1-15. We're not going to be eliminated from the playoffs after 5 games. And most teams go through those periods. I do think the Seahawks will go through that period. But next year is not the year. I think for the next 2 or 3 seasons, I think as long as the Seahawks have Russell Wilson, I think we're going to always be competitive. And that's a nice feeling.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think, and I always hesitate to say this because I think this is the cheesy kind of sports talk bullshit that probably makes you cringe a little bit. I will be interested to see, though, what the personality of the team becomes, because that's my one takeaway from this season of the Seahawks, and I could be wrong about this. You could maybe tell me in one word what their personality was, but like, it just seemed like this was, I watched like three different teams this year. I mean, the red hot offense with the poor defense at the beginning, then the defense kind of firms up a little bit and Jamal starts standing out, and I guess that's when they got Dunlap about mid, right? Like in a maybe beginning second third of the season, they brought him in maybe a few weeks in. Am I right about that? Anyway.
Yeah, mid-season.
Yeah, and then them really just kind of like not clicking at all here kind of in the second half. Again, they won the division. So I need to, you know,
yeah, they
slow
won
my
a lot
roll
of games
a little bit here. Like, they
you
won
know, I mean,
the
that's
division.
The thing. They went 12-4.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that's got to be probably in the top four seasons they've ever had. They have the year they won the Super Bowl. They probably had a better record than that. Maybe the year they went back. But like 12-4 is a pretty decent record in the NFL.
Amen. Yeah, but it is just hard for me, and maybe this speaks more to me than the team. It's just hard for me to really kind of get a sense of where the Seahawks are right now, because they looked a little bit all over the map. So it would be nice to see some consistency, certainly. And like you said, and I'm with you as well. I don't know much about it, but it would be nice to start with firming up the line a bit.
I just think and the thing is, really good offensive linemen are hard to come by. That's why people use first-round picks on these giant mountains of humans. So it's not like there's a bunch of super competent linemen just waiting around for a job. But to me, it's like, that just seems like the only, like, that's the thing you have to fix. I don't know how you fix it. I don't know if we have the money to fix it. I don't know if we need to hire somebody else. But it's just like, you have to get Russell Wilson more time. Everything else is fine. He can, you know, he can throw to David Moore. He can throw to DK. He can throw to Tyler. Like Chris Carson or whomever it is can run behind him. I think we all agree it's not the Rashad Penny era seems to have come and gone.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is kind of a bummer because he did have some flashes, but I don't know. I think that the Seahawks are going to be. Here's what I think about when I think about next year. I think about Lumen Field being full of people. Because I think even by conservative estimates, the thoughts are fall, we will probably have enough vaccination that people can go to things again. I hope anyway. So Lumen Field full of people, the Seahawks somehow protecting Russell, and the moment when Russell Wilson just throws like an incredible pass to Tyler Lockett, and my heart is full of joy. That's what I'm imagining next year. I think it's still going to be a fun season. I don't think that the Seahawks are like at crisis mode yet. I mean, they won 12 games this year. They just had a shitty game at the wrong time, is kind of my take.
And you know what's going to happen before that, Luke? A really fun Mariners season. I'm serious. It's going to be fun. I know that we're gearing up.
As long as you
don't
listen to Scott Service.
We're gearing up for maybe another disappointing year. I believe Mariners will make the playoffs this year. What did Service say?
I like it. He said to manage your expectations. He said they're still a ways off. But he's only the manager.
Wait, was that Service or was that the general manager?
Oh, maybe it was DePoto.
I think it was DePoto. Blanking on his name.
Well, anyway, I think I'm excited for that too. Honestly, and I've got to go here because I've got to transition to my other job after this, but which is amateur baseball scout for the Seattle Mariners. Got to get down to Vero Beach, Florida, and look at a lefty.
Did you know Squiggy? I texted you guys that. I got no response. Did you know that Squiggy was a
scout Mariners.
You had known that ahead of before he passed away?
I hadn't known that. Amazing. I'm sorry that I did not respond to you. I don't know where I was in space and time at that moment.
Ago,
but yeah, what an odd detail. The guy that played Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley, part of his life after showbiz was as a scout for the Mariners.
I know.
Which is incredible. I think I have more tied up in wanting to be able to attend live sporting events than I thought I did. Not even that I want to go to them. I just want there to be people at them. Like when I think about the Mariners playing another season with no fans, it feels weird and like Blade Runner to me. It just feels like I'm having a hard time fully embracing baseball without the idea of people being there. And it's just a mental block for me. But yeah, that's for some reason a thing. Like I was saying to my buddy Graham, who's a huge baseball fan, that was like, I was like, this summer, dude, if there's like in July, if there's a vaccine, I mean, you and I were talking about this, I think on the No Point, you and I were talking about like being at what's it called now? T-Mobile Field, having a beer. It's a sunny day. Like, I just want that to happen so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, everyone's dealing with the pandemic in different ways and responding in different ways. But for me, it's like this idea of another season of baseball that's just played in a bubble. It bums me out. And it's not even baseball's fault. It just is a reminder to me of how different our lives are right now.
You know, for me, I have been... honestly, there are a few things that I'm really latching onto with my imagination about what I want to come back as society reopens. And baseball, going to a baseball game, is almost number one on the list, if not number one on the list. I keep thinking about it, how happy I'm going to be with my peanuts and my hot dog watching a baseball game. I'm going to buy whatever the expensive tickets are for my first game back. But that thing that you're saying about it, about playing without crowds for now and it not feeling real, when you say that right now on January 11th and I picture it, I have that same feeling you're describing, except once the season began and it was the reality, I was only paying attention to the pitches. Like I immediately forgot. I guess I didn't forget because you'd see the cardboard cutouts, but I would get so wrapped up in the games, it didn't bother me that there was not a crowd there when I was watching it on TV. So
I agree that once I'm listening on the radio and they're piping in the fan sounds, or even in football, if they don't pull out to a wide shot, I get lost in it pretty quickly. But for me, baseball is weird. Baseball is the most anticipatory sport for me, and I think it's because I associate it with summertime.
Yep, yep.
So, like, I love football, but I anticipate baseball.
Yes, yes.
And so taking out the part of it, which is, and also I go to more baseball games. I don't even want to go to a football game. I literally don't. If I never go to a Seahawks game in person, it's fine for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But I love going to Mariners games. And so I don't
unless
know.
Unless Alaska Airlines wants to send us to another game in the
in which
suite.
Case, we're there.
Yes.
We're there. But yeah, so I don't know. For me, it's like when I fantasize about the Mariners season, it's like I guess I'm almost jumping a whole season ahead. Like this season, I will follow them. I hope that they do well. It would be great if they went to the playoffs. They have some exciting players. Maybe I'll get into it. I don't know. I live alone in an apartment in Portland. What the hell else do I have to do? I mean, honestly.
I think we'll go to a game. You and I will go to a Mariners game next season. It won't be spring training. It won't be the early, but we will go.
August or something, maybe.
Sure.
I may be crying when I walk into the stadium. Don't judge me, because that will be a big moment. But yeah, I'm really excited about when people can attend baseball games, and it's not even a thing. You know, I'm looking. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't know if the Portland Pickles are still going to exist, but I want to go see them down here.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Awesome.
All right. Well, listen. We are all Browns fans now, except for the people who live in Kansas City. But you guys have had a good run. Let's just give a little, let the Browns have a little fun once in their lives.
Listen, whatever. Like, and again, like, the Browns didn't lose to the Steelers. Unless the Browns do something just really, really embarrassing, like, it's all gravy. Like you said, like, the narrative has changed, you know? Like, John Clayton won't go on the air the next day and say, see, the Browns were just, the emperor has no clothes. Like, they're a real team that beat some good teams. The only bummer about yesterday is that I had to admit that you're right about those Steelers.
What a good downside, right?
Yeah, I'm just teasing. But I did say that to people.
I think we can all agree.
Son of a bitch, Luke was right.
Lock Kevin Stefanski in a basement.
Yes.
Never let him anywhere near the field.
Oh, such a beautiful man to lock underground.
If we've learned one thing, it's that he can't be trusted with his team anymore.
That's right.
All right. Well, listen, that's going to do it for this show. I'm sure we'll be back next week with something or other for you, since this is now shifted into a Browns cast. Everybody out in the land, you can listen to this for free. We're not behind a paywall, so there you go.
Don't call it.
Anyway, we'll see you next week for another one of these. Until then, do not forget that when you're talking about the No Point Conversion, one of the newest shows added to the Dan Le Batard, John Skipper, Mina Kimes verse. You can never forget that with this show, there is absolutely no detail too wrong.
Nor tangent too long.
Go Browns.